The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.
Welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show, EDU edition, as we dive deep into one fairly narrow topic and dig a little bit deeper than we would on our normal Q&A show, which also posts up at another time during the week on our podcast here. So this is the EDU show for education. The topic of the day is how wages affect Social Security and Medicare premiums, kind of as a subtitle there. So definitely we're going to discuss all of the aspects of wages when you have earned wages and are collecting Social Security. What are the ramifications? Some people realize that there's a conflict there or an effect there, but misunderstand exactly the scope of the issue. So we're going to dig into that today, and Jim's with me here, and I think this all came about from several questions that were
several
sent to
email
us.
Questions, all on wages and Social Security. We got three, and they came in right around each other, November 5th, October 27th, October 23rd. You okay?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I saw you looking around. So
I was about to sneeze, so I think I stifled it, so we're good to go.
You know, I know, and we talked about this on the last show, the Q&A show we just recorded, but I want our listeners again to know it has been brought to our attention that the sound quality of some of our recordings has been subpar. Chris has started to work on it, and the reason I thought of this, Chris, as you order all this new equipment that we're going to have that will hopefully make us sound even better, you should get a sneeze or a cough button.
Okay.
Well, that way you just press a little button and then you could sneeze or cough.
I see. Okay.
I just want to throw that out there since you were buying things.
Well, since it's your credit card, I'll buy as much stuff as you want me to.
Well, that way when I start coughing because I'm drinking a latte and all of a sudden I can't stop coughing, then I could have a little button I could press.
I get it.
That would be pretty darn good.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll look into that for you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. All right. So let's go through the three email questions that led to today's topic, which is really about, it's more of how wages interact with Social Security. Mm-hmm. I think that's a better way of putting it. And then, of course, Medicare is going to come into play as well under the income-related monthly adjusted amount, that new means testing of Medicare. But there's a lot of confusion on wages and Social Security, Chris. So I'll read these emails in the order they were received, and this will wipe out three more emails from our stack of stuff emails, because on this week's Q&A show, we only got through two. So here's three more, so this will be five. Perfect. Okay, so this one came in on October 23rd, and he's from New Jersey. I turned 63 in September. I stopped working the end of 2017 and do not expect to have any job going forward. My benefit at full retirement age is $600 a month more than if I claim now. So he's thinking about waiting. Mm-hmm. My question is this. Is my benefit at full retirement age based on the assumption that I will continue to earn wages between now and full retirement age? I'm trying to determine how much my benefit will be reduced if I claim now. So I want to better understand this full retirement age benefit and working. Mm-hmm. So there's one kind of tying into wages. He's a little unsure how they're going to factor
in. This is dealing with how your earnings record helps create your, doesn't help create, it's actually what creates your full retirement age benefit, which is then adjusted up or down depending on when you claim compared to your full retirement age. But it is your earnings record itself. And he's asking a question, how does my earnings record after I've turned 62, 63. How is that going to affect me? And are they making any weird assumptions that I'm going to continue working when they're telling me what my benefit will be at full retirement age?
So this has to do with wages and Social Security.
Yep.
Okay. Next question came in.
And we'll answer in a second.
This one came in from Arkansas, and it came in 4 or 5 days after this first question I read. And he begins by thanking us for answering his question, even though we hadn't answered it. Yes. Thanks for taking my question. I have been looking for someone for advice on Social Security and Medicare. I hope you don't mind if my wife and I pick your brains for answers. No, we don't mind. That's why we do this. Mm-hmm. We need help and advice for my retirement Social Security. I work for the federal government or have worked for the federal government since 1984. I want to retire at age 65 in March of 2019. So he's not too far away, about 5 more months away. Would my pay from my job in 2019 affect the Social Security I will receive if I file early for my benefits, so before his full retirement age, in May of 2019? Also, does anyone there know and can advise on Medicare? And then he asks a Medicare question. We'll answer that on another show because it gets away from this. So he wants to know, would his pay, would his earnings in 2019 affect what he's going to earn in Social Security in 2019?
Right. So here's another wages question. How do his wages interact with his Social Security benefit? And he's a person who's going to work for the first few months of the year, then retire and start collecting Social Security early, which means before his full retirement age. And yes, there is an effect. We'll talk about that in just a second.
And then the final question came in just today.
Hot off the press.
Hot off the press. And it just, the timing was perfect because we just so happened to have been planning the EDU show on wages and Social Security. So this came from an Iowawian. We have an Iowa listener. She begins. It's a female. I visited my local Social Security office in preparation of retirement and to collect survivor benefits. I asked them about the earnings test in case I want to continue working part-time for the first few years. Is there a difference in my calculation of earnings if I retire December 31st of 2018 as opposed to February 28th, 2019? And when I first read that, I was like, what? And then she goes on to explain. The Social Security lady told me one way gives me an annual limit with no monthly max, but if I retire on the other date, the February one, gives me a monthly max. Does that make any sense to you? She said approximately 17,800 divided by 12, and then she put question mark, question mark, question mark, question mark. I am so confused. Mm-hmm. They've scheduled a phone appointment for me to continue discussing this, but I really would like to clear up this earnings limit before I talk to them again. Perhaps you can make this clearer than the mud they have made it. Thanks for your podcast, Jim and Chris.
So what this is regarding is the application of the earnings test, how they actually apply the limits to then offset some of your benefits that you're going to receive if you're working prior to your full retirement age, which clearly that's the issue. She wouldn't be concerned about it if she was over the full retirement age, but she's got this question, and she's got, as is unfortunately so common, not a great explanation coming from Social Security. Those people that are delivering this information probably know what they're talking about in this case, but they're presenting it to her in a confusing manner. So we'll do our best to clear that up.
So why don't we begin, before we jump into the earnings test, start with the first question. Mm-hmm. And we're beginning this discussion, folks, with someone at retirement. So this isn't if you're still working. Remember, the guy retired, but he wants to delay because he's going to get $600 more. Mm-hmm. But he's wondering, he retired at 62 or 63. He's going to delay to his full retirement age, probably a good 4 years. He's wondering, is the benefit he's seeing, assuming he is continuing to work to his full retirement age or not, because he's not earning any more wages.
Right.
This is all about wages and Social Security. So why don't we begin there?
So your base earnings record that generates your retirement benefit is going to be a snapshot of your whole history of earnings since birth as of your age 62. At 62, Social Security stops estimating your benefit. In the years prior to that, when you receive your Social Security statement, those are estimates for what your benefit will be based on your work history and the assumption that you're going to continue to work until 62, earning about what you have the last couple of years, and then they make another couple of assumptions in there. This is all part of estimating your benefit. Once you reach age 62, there's no longer an estimate involved. They have all of the data to set your full retirement age benefit, what we call your PIA, primary insurance amount. They don't need to guess, estimate, forecast. They can tell you exactly what it is because it's based on all numbers that are known in your earnings record. You have now generated an earnings record for the past, 62 years, technically. Some people think, oh, no, it's only 40 and all that. No, it takes a look at your entire earnings record. They cherry pick your 35 best years for the calculation, but they look at all your entire earnings record at 62. They no longer assume you're going to continue to work. And why is it 62? 62 is your age of first eligibility. That's when you could first claim your benefit. So that's where they draw the line to actually officially set your primary insurance amount. After that, wages can affect that primary insurance amount, but only for the better. No reduced or zero earnings after 62 will harm your benefit. You could stop working at 62, have zero earnings for the next 4 or 5 years until you reach your full retirement age, and your benefit would be exactly what they calculated at 62, with some increases actually for COLA, for cost of living adjustments. But let's leave that out of the discussion right now. There would be no surprise. Your benefit at your full retirement age would be what they told you it was going to be at age 62. Now, if you continue to work, those wages will be considered in your earnings record and in the PIA calculation if they are substantial enough to replace a lower earnings entry in your top 35. Now, a lot of people are working part-time when they are approaching their full retirement age, and a lot of times they're not high enough earnings that will help them. But some people, they're continuing to work full-blown, full-bore, 100% at their career job and may very well create some entries in their earnings record that will replace maybe earnings record entries from their early 40s or their late 30s or even 20s or something like that, depending on which years were in that 35 best that were taken into account at age 62. So bottom line, all these words mean any wages you earn after you reach 62 can help or increase your PIA, but cannot reduce them. It's once they tell you your benefit at 62, when they do the calculation, and they'll tell you what you'd get claiming early, what you'd get waiting, those numbers are worst case scenario. They will not go down from there. They could only go up if your wages are high enough to justify it.
Perfect. And that talks about wages as before Social Security begins. Now let's get into wages after Social Security begins. Mm-hmm. And that starts to get into the earnings test. Why don't you walk our listeners through what this earnings test is? Because both these next questions have to do with the earnings test.
Right. Before I launch specifically into the earnings test, let's say you do turn on your Social Security early, before your full retirement age, and you're still working, those wages could end up increasing your benefit on. So they don't only consider wages before you've turned on your Social Security, they consider your wages whenever you've earned them. And if they will create a higher benefit, you'll get credit for that when they do the calculation every year. So back to the earnings test, though. If you file for benefits prior to your full retirement age, you are subject to earnings limits that could reduce your Social Security benefit depending on how much you earn. Now, this is only an issue. This little piece, the earnings test itself, is only applicable before the month you turn your full retirement age. The month you turn your full retirement age, you are no longer affected by the earnings test itself. So this is only for people prior to their full retirement age month. In the early years, say 62, 63, 64, etc., the limit is, in 2018, I'll give the 2019 numbers, in 2018, the limit was $17,040 a year, which equates to about $1,420 per month. In 2019, that limit is going to $17,640 per year, which is $1,470 per month. Now, we give you a monthly equivalent, but the earnings test by default is applied on a yearly basis. They don't care when during the year you earn it. If you exceed that $17,000 and change number in 2018 or 2019, they're going to withhold benefits at the rate of $1 for every $2 you're over that limit. So if you're working part-time, a lot of times you'll stay under that. I know a lot of people who intentionally restrict their work to stay under that so they don't expose themselves to the earnings test. But if you're still working more substantially or at your career job, you're very well going to make higher than the $17,000 number, exposing your benefits to a reduction that will ultimately be recalculated when you reach your full retirement age, but in the near term, you'll be affected by this reduction at the rate of $1 for every $2 over that limit. There's a special rule for the year that you reach your full retirement age. If you start claiming benefits in the year you're reaching your full retirement age, but are claiming them early, so let's say you reach your full retirement age in November, and you decide to claim in March of that year. Technically, you're claiming early, which means you're exposed to the earnings test, but because you're so close, they give you a break on the earnings test. They say, okay, in that year, you can earn in 2019, the number, I'll give you that number since we're so close to 2019, $46,920. So way, way, way higher than the $17,640 in the years prior to that. In the year you turn your full retirement age, much higher limit before you are harmed. And even if you exceed that, it's at a lower rate. It's a dollar for every $3 over that limit. Not a lot of people run into an earnings test issue in the year they reach their full retirement age. But so that's kind of the basics of the earnings
test. If I could, because mm-hmm. we're asked this all the time,
yeah.
Why don't you talk about what earnings apply to the earnings test? There's many different types of earnings you can have. What earnings apply? All? Some? Which ones?
Well, probably where people misunderstand it is they think of income. Income can come from all kinds of sources. Income from work, which we call earnings. Income from interest on a interest-bearing account of some kind. You're crinkling right into the microphone. It's very distracting. That's the audio issue that we'll blame it on Jim. He crinkles his mint wrappers into the microphone.
It's my Jolly Rancher wrappers.
Okay. Anyway. So you can have income from dividends. You can have income from lots of different sources. The only income that is considered in the earnings test is wages from work. Okay, it has to be wages from work, either you working for someone else as an employee or self-employed, and it'll be essentially your income after recognizing typical expenses in your business, so the net itself, not the gross revenues. So this applies to self-employed people as well, but it has to be from work that you're doing currently. So it takes off for consideration interest income that you might have, dividends that are being paid,
IRA
gains that you might have from a sale of some other asset, distributions from retirement accounts, all of that, which on your tax form is going to be considered income, is not considered earnings for the earnings test. It is only earnings for wages from work in the current period.
And I think that's what confuses people, Chris, because those other income sources, distributions from your IRA, your 401k, from an annuity, those are taxed to you as income, so people think they fall to the earnings test, but it doesn't.
That's the good news, right?
That's the good news.
Good news.
Now, there are some income payments that are taxed as income and are earned income that don't count on the earnings test. And most of those are called special payments. And the easiest description is, let's say it would be someone like a car salesman may sell a car in December. Mm-hmm. But his commission doesn't come until the following January when he's retired.
Right.
Even though it was from work earned the year before and it's taxed to him as income, it does not apply to the earnings test. You might see this a lot with insurance agents. Insurance agents may sell life insurance policies or something that is still giving them income from work they did
years
previous.
Ago, maybe. Mm-hmm.
And it's still taxed to them as income. But why don't you talk a little bit about those special payments? They don't count on the earnings test.
Right. So if you're being paid income and earnings from work, but it's for work that you did in a previous period before you're claiming your Social Security, it does not apply. Now, you do have to provide some proof. They're going to question it. They're going to see this, and they're going to receive the, you know, the W-2 or whatever you received from your employer that shows income in, say, 2019, but it was for work done in 2018 or 17 or 16. You might have to provide some additional documentation to Social Security to show them that this qualifies for this special payment exemption. It's actually pretty easy to do because this is more common than you might imagine. It happens quite frequently. So they're set up to handle this. They'll just ask for some basic documentation showing that it's a payment for work that was done maybe a year before or 2 years before or maybe way before if you're getting trails on some long-term insurance product or something as an insurance salesperson.
So with that in mind, Chris, let's run with this to the next logical conclusion before we start getting into these questions that these two listeners had. So you have income coming in, these special payments coming in that will not subject you to the earnings test, even though they were earned income, but they do subject you to paying taxes on your Social Security. So earnings impact Social Security differently. We had the first listener who was wondering, do I have to keep working and keep making earnings to get the benefit they're projecting I'm going to get at my full retirement age if I retire after 62, but before my full retirement age? You answered that question. The answer is no. And then we're starting to get listeners' questions on, well, how does the earnings test reduce my benefits? And we're explaining that. But another question we always get when it involves wages and earnings and Social Security is, how do I pay taxes on my Social Security?
Right, because there's really two things that affect your Social Security benefit that are affected by wages that you're receiving or income you're receiving. There's the earnings test issue that applies before your full retirement age and are the limits, like I mentioned. We'll get into that one question here in a second because she was asking specifically
about
the monthly versus annual. But the earnings test is one issue. But there's also this taxation question on the other side. Other income you have. Now, the good news is at this point, the way the limits are for taxation of Social Security, if your only source of income is Social Security and nothing else, it's received with 0% federal income tax.
You're also not living a very comfortable life.
No, but if that's your sole source of income, and now maybe you have assets, right, that aren't, you can tap. So it doesn't have anything, doesn't necessarily mean you're uncomfortable, but your only source of income in the current year is Social Security. That's because for taxation purposes, for the determination of taxation of your Social Security, the bad news is it includes practically every income source you can imagine. So all those things I mentioned before that are excluded for the earnings test get captured in this question of, is my Social Security taxable or not?
And that's where I wanted to go with this because...
But before you go, the Social Security itself, only half of your Social Security benefit goes into this calculation. And one half of your Social Security benefit will not put you above the threshold for paying taxes on your Social Security. So that's why I make the comment that if your only income source at this point is Social Security, it'll be received in 2018, 2019, 100% tax-free. In the future, this isn't going to be the case because the limits for the thresholds for creating taxes aren't rising and people's Social Security are going up with COLA adjustments. There will be a point where people only receiving Social Security are going to start to get captured in this taxation issue unless they raise the thresholds. But
and that's what I didn't want to go down that rabbit hole, but I did want to point out to our listeners that wages impact Social Security differently. And even though you might not be subject to the earnings test or the wages aren't being applied to the earnings test, they are being applied to the taxation of Social Security.
Right.
The taxation of Social Security is at very low limits. Ronald Reagan started taxing Social Security under his administration. I don't want to blame him. He signed the law. Congress wrote the law. But the Congress in the early 1980s wrote the law based on Alan Greenspan was on this commission and came up with all these ways to shore up Social Security before it went under. And one of the things they started to do for the first time ever was tax Social Security. And they set wage limits of $32,000 for a married couple and $25,000 for a single individual, that if you had income from all sources, folks, distributions from IRAs, distributions from 401ks, pensions, half your Social Security benefits, tax-free municipal bond income, everything.
Interest income.
Everything. You name it, it's in right. there. And if you had income amounts in excess of $25,000 if you were single, $32,000 if you were married, then and only then up to half your Social Security was subject to taxes. This is going back to 83. It passed because Congress and President Reagan said this impacts less than 1% of Social Security recipients. What they weren't telling you was, first of all, most people weren't retired yet collecting Social Security, hence it impacts less than 1% of Social Security recipients. And they didn't tell you these numbers, this ungodly amount of $25,000 and $32,000, which back in 83 was a hell of a lot of money, is not indexed for inflation. Today, pretty much everyone is going to be paying taxes on their Social Security. Maybe not today, about, I think, almost half today. By the time you and I collect, Chris, nearly all will be impacted.
Right.
Now, that said, what I want you to understand is all income, not just wages on the earnings test, but all income, distributions from IRAs, 401ks, 403bs, annuity payments, tax-free muni interest, as I already said, will subject you to income taxes on your Social Security.
Which effectively reduces what you have left to spend. So that's
correct.
When we say wages can negatively affect your Social Security benefits, this taxation issue goes on forever. It doesn't. At least the earnings test stops when you reach your full retirement age. But this question of, will my effective take-home benefit from Social Security, will it be reduced because of wages and other income I have? Yes, because of taxation, not because of the earnings test anymore. So you have kind of this forever and ever, no matter what your age, when you're receiving Social Security benefits, this taxation issue that might reduce. And then during your pre-full retirement age years, the earnings test on top of that might also affect your benefit.
And this goes to one question on Roth conversions, because right now under current law, distributions from a Roth IRA are not part of the calculation to tax Social Security. So theoretically speaking, and one could put this into the argument of I'm going to convert like hell while I can, you convert a lot of your retirement accounts while you're delaying Social Security mm-hmm. to get the larger age 70 benefit. And get it into a Roth IRA and bite the bullet and pay the taxes, it is quite possible that for the rest of your life, your Social Security is 100% tax-free because you just take the money out of a Roth IRA now. But
those are part of larger tax strategies
yes.
that people should definitely consider and I think is underappreciated in people's overall retirement planning.
Yeah, a lot of people don't look at this.
Look
we
at
do.
At
we do as right. a firm look
correct.
At that because it lends support to our decision to help you convert and pay taxes now, which nobody likes to do. You're going to want to pay even less in the future as more and more your Social Security gets dragged into taxes. Okay, so I just kind of wanted to tie in that wages may not necessarily impact the earnings test, but they can impact the taxation of Social Security. Let's, before we run out of time, Chris, in this EDU show, answer the listener's question, because she was totally confused on annual or monthly, and she wants us to clear the mud on what Social Security was saying. If she claimed on December 31st, it was going to affect her one way. If she claimed on February 18th and stopped working, they were going to do some different calculation for her.
So what you've got typically by default is the earnings test is applied annually. They just look at your annual earnings amount. If you exceed the limits that I mentioned before, so say you're early in your eligibility for Social Security, so the limit in 2019 would be $17,640. If you're early, when you decide to claim and when you stopped working can affect how you want them to apply the earnings test. And they give you a choice, luckily, in the year that you first claim. By default, it's annual. So if you just let them do it without mentioning your request for some other option, they're going to apply it on an annual basis. So if you have substantial earnings that year before you turn on your Social Security, you might find yourself affected by the earnings test because you're way above the 17,000 figure, even though you've stopped working by the month that you actually claim. And that's what she's thinking of doing if she claims in December of this year. She'll have earned quite a lot of money, maybe way above the earnings test. But if she claims first in December, that December benefit is going to be captured and connected with the earnings that she had this year and maybe have a drastic effect on
if not
her
wipe
benefit
them out.
Or completely wipe it out. Now, what she could do in that case is ask for her what's called grace year, which is in the first year that she claims, she can ask them, instead of applying the earnings test annually, can you please break it up into a monthly test instead? And that's where that $1,470 per month for 2019 comes in. You can ask them, please apply this on a monthly basis. I want you to ignore all the earnings in the months prior. And the bad news is the total limit for the remainder of the year is going to be less than the $17,640 because you're essentially giving up all the months before you claimed. But from that month forward, as long as you don't make more than the monthly amount in earnings, and maybe she's going to fully retire so the amount is zero, she can escape the earnings test completely for that year because they're going to ignore all of the earnings prior to the month when she's claiming her Social Security benefit. So you essentially have two choices in the first year. You can let them apply it yearly, and some people, depending on the timing of their earnings during the year, can benefit from that. Other people will want to elect that they ignore the months prior to filing and only apply the earnings test for the remainder of the year on a monthly basis. But if you're going to continue to work, you kind of have to look at when those earnings are going to fall.
Let me pick your brain, Obi-Wan Kenobi, then, on this for this woman. It's leading me to now understand what she was trying to say because she's confused. And she says it's clear as mud. When she went into her local Social Security office, they were telling her, I guess, I'm just assuming here, if she was going to apply in December, they were not going to look at it annually because her earnings were probably so high January through November, it would have, if they looked at it annually, it would have wiped out, because of the earnings test, her December check.
Correct.
So they were going to apply the monthly limit if she was to retire in December.
Right.
And the monthly limit would allow her, because it would essentially ignore everything she earned in January through November. Instead, she said another option she was contemplating and talking to them about was working four more months, December, January, February, and March, and retiring next year in March.
She said February, I think.
Was it February?
February 18th, yeah. Okay. So only working maybe
so a couple
month
more
or
months.
Month and a half.
And in that case, they were going to apply. They could apply the annual in that place, and she shouldn't have earned enough.
Right. They wouldn't bother to set it up on this grace year option because the likelihood of her earning more than $17,000.
No, 44 something in the year she retires.
No.
She didn't reach her full retirement age.
It isn't the year you retire.
It's full retirement
age. If you retire in your full retirement age year, and she didn't tell us her age.
Let me see if she does tell us that, though.
I don't think she did.
She didn't.
No, so assuming she's not, if she doesn't earn more than $17,040 in the first month and a half, then it's not going to matter. She doesn't have to worry about it at that point because no matter how they apply the test, annually or monthly, she's not going to exceed it. So they weren't telling her that when she applies, she's forced to do one in one month and something else in the other month. It's always her choice. Now, they're hopefully going to do their job and explain what's the best choice for your particular situation. But if you're going to actually stop working, you just need to take a look at if you want to elect the grace year or not. There are cases where if you're going to continue to work past your benefit claiming month, that you won't want them to apply it on a monthly basis. Say maybe you stopped working, but you're going back to work. Part-time, you got a part-time job, and you're going to earn more than the $1,470 per month, but there's not many months left in the year, so you're not going to exceed the $17,000. Because some people say, well, wait a minute, you're going to do the grace year election every time. That's not true. Most of the time, the traditional approach where you retire and then claim, yes, the monthly election will completely shield you that first year from the earnings test, because if you don't earn a dime more from earnings from work, from the month you claim benefits to the end, electing the grace year will shield you completely from the earnings test. However, if you have a non-traditional path where you claim and then you're going to go back to work part-time, you might find it beneficial to use the annual default election for the earnings test. You're going to have to look at your specific situation. Fewer people benefit from that, I admit, but sometimes it does happen. And having a full understanding of how your timing of your work in that first year coincides with your claiming of benefits will help you decide which to elect.
Okay. Well, let's wrap this up, this EDU up, with our last email question. So hopefully it cleared up this person's clear as mud issue. The reason they, again, were going to look at two different ones, if you did retire in December, you earned so much, they would have to use the grace year. They would have to look at this from a monthly basis in the month you retired, December, and say, hey, you didn't earn anything in December. We're applying the grace year that year. You're covered. The following year, they were simply saying, you're not going to earn enough in January and February. We're just going to apply the standard default. Look at this from an annual standpoint. And as long as you don't go back to work and earn anything, you'll be fine.
Right.
So they were trying to be nice. They just didn't explain it very well. And I'm not sure if we explained it very well.
I think they explained it as they were going to decide and force you into something where it's really your choice, and they're just hopefully educating you on the ramifications of that choice. And it should, if they do a good job explaining it, if you provide to them your earnings amounts prior to your claiming month, they'll help you figure out which one is the better way to go.
Okay. So let's just tie up this last question then, and then we'll wrap up this EDU show on how earnings impacts and affects Social Security. It's not just the earnings test, it's taxation, it's all these types of issues. Remember, this is the gentleman who was working for the federal government. He wants to retire in March of 2019 before his early retirement age, for his full retirement age for Social Security, but the age in order to get early retirement from the feds, age 65, would pay from my job in 2019 affect my Social Security payment if I filed? Oh, wait, we already answered this one, didn't we?
Well, his and her, those two questions were pretty much
very,
related.
Very close.
And it's going to be a matter of there's the earnings test issue, but then there's also the taxation issue as well. So they are going to be exposed taxation-wise, depending on all of their income from all sources. But if, as far as the earnings test, he should be able to elect whatever is appropriate for him, either the default annual application or the monthly grace year election, so that he can avoid earnings test ramifications if he's truly going to stop working. If you're truly stopping working before you file for your benefits, the grace year will save you from the earnings test. That's bottom line. It's just requesting that it be applied. They should be quizzing you on this when you're in there. If not, make sure you're aware of the ramifications of this when you go in so that you can elect that proactively. But if your earnings are going to continue, if your wages from part-time, full-time work are going to continue past when you claim your benefits, then we need to take a broader look at what's going on and figure out what's the best way to elect that first year, or maybe even delay claiming a little bit longer. If you're earning that much, you maybe want to consider delaying your Social Security benefit till it escapes the earnings test and puts it in a better tax light.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the one thing I am going to jump into his Medicare question real quick since he's listening right now. Well, he's not listening at this moment, we're recording, but I'm going to tell him to listen to the show. He goes on to say, does anyone provide advice on Medicare and what to file for? I have heard if you file for Medicare A and B and then file for F, F cancels out some of your A and B. Okay, he's got too many things moving around
mixing,
there. Mixing, right. So I just want to point out to him a few things. Number one, you've worked for the feds for 40 years. You have one hell of a medical retirement benefit. You are going to get and stay in the federal medical program. Don't leave. You have the option to leave and go on just Medicare. You have the option to keep just federal retirement benefits. Well, you have the option of melding the two. And that's usually what we recommend people. Mm-hmm. You're going to take the federal retirement plan and...
For medical.
Mm-hmm. And Medicare. And Medicare becomes your primary payer. Mm-hmm. And the Fed plan becomes essentially one hell of an F plan, right, which is a Medigap plan that no one outside of the federal government can even come close to getting. So you listener, are overanalyzing this. You have an awesome health care benefit. Stay in the federal program and make sure you time your CSRS or your FERS pension to make sure that it keeps paying some to your spouse so she keeps staying in this medical program as well. In other words, don't take the single life payment, but anyone good on federal benefits can explain all that to you. I don't want to go down that rabbit hole. What you're talking about, listener, you're overanalyzing it. Don't worry about it. You're going to get Medicare. I personally generally recommend Fed employees stay in both. You're going to enroll in the medical plan, the medical retirement benefit from the feds, and in Medicare. Medicare essentially becomes the primary payer. The feds pick up everything else that Medicare doesn't cover. So in other words, it's two different branches of your employer who's paying. The Medicare is going to pay for some, and the federal retirement plan, the federal health care plan, is going to pay for others. For everyone else, don't get confused. There are only three, or technically four, types of Medicare: Part A, Part B, Part C, which is Medicare Advantage, which Democrats have made abundantly clear if Medicare for All pass, Part C goes away, and Part D, which is your prescription drug benefits. It's about as deep into that as I want to get. F, when you start getting into A, B, C, F, G, these are called supplemental plans. Medicare at best, except for the listener who asked the question, because of his wonderful retirement plan, the feds are going to pick up everything. For most people, Medicare at best is an 80-20 plan. In other words, they're going to pay for 80% of your expenses, you're going to pay for 20. But once you understand how the co-pays, the deductibles, and all of those work, Medicare, Chris, is more like a 60-40 plan. So people have to supplement what Medicare doesn't cover, the coinsurance, the deductibles, the co-pays. Medicare doesn't cover everything. A lot of people think, oh, as soon as I get to 65, Jim, I'm all set.
Right.
No, you're not. You're actually paying a hell of a lot of money still. Because at best, Medicare is 80-20, which means you have to pick up a copay or a coinsurance of about 20% of the expenses of most procedures. And then you are left with copays and deductibles. So they buy Medigap policies. That's why they call them Medigap. These are sold by private insurance and not offered by the federal government. And a Medigap covers, Chris, the gap in Medicare's coverage. And you can buy different levels, A being one of the least beneficial and F being the most beneficial, which go away in 2019. You can't get F plans anymore. And F plans have no out-of-pocket expenses. They pick up everything. And that's why under the Obama administration, they outlawed them. If you're in them, you can keep them, but you can't get into new ones. And the reason they wanted to get rid of that is because they picked up everything. And so between Medicare and the F plan, you weren't paying anything. They felt people were consuming too much health care.
Well, you pay the premiums.
You paid the premiums, but...
But it was a fixed amount. Yeah.
Well, the premiums change every
year.
Could
go up, but it doesn't. There's no payment above that.
Right. But what the government was saying is, look, you have no out-of-pocket pain,
right,
and you're consuming too much health care. Right. So F plans are going away. They're going to go the way of the dodo bird. That said... What I'm trying to get people to understand is a Medigap policy is not Medicare. There's Medicare Part A, Part B. There's Medicare Part C, which is Medicare Advantage, and Part D, which is prescription drugs. Do not confuse them with Medigap plans, which are F and G and A and B and C, which gets confusing because there's an A and B and C.
Right.
So Medigap is different than Medicare. Care.
Which he has a glorious, effectively Medigap policy in his federal health
care. He's not going to need to go buy a separate F plan, listener, because your health plan, the plan you're in with the feds, that plan, again, as a Fed employee, you can go Medicare only, which I think you'd be a fool because now you have to go buy a F plan or a Medigap. You can stay in just the Fed plan or you can meld them. And for a variety of reasons, most people recommend you meld them.
Mm-hmm.
So you would enroll in Medicare, but keep the Fed plan. And that acts, Chris, like the F plan that's going away. It acts as a Medigap on steroids. This thing covers everything.
Right.
And that's what I would do if I were you, listener. However, talk to a we're not in a financial planning agreement, so I don't want you to run, oh, the guy on the radio said I should do this. Guy on the radio says you should consider doing that, but you should definitely talk to someone first. But for all other listeners, don't get confused on Medigap and Medicare. Two totally different things. And don't think at all, listeners, oh, once I get to 65, I'm all set. I'm on Medicare. Government pays for everything. Government pays when you add it all up for about 60% of what your health care costs are going to be. You have to pick up the rest. Don't blow it. Enroll in a Medigap plan. Talk to Medicare providers. Talk to Medigap providers. Get some good information. Be very wary because these policies are sold by commissions. So you're mostly dealing with people who are trying to give you quote unquote impartial advice, but getting you to buy a policy so they can get paid often becomes their primary aim here. But Medigap is very important. And if you enroll in Medigap during the open enrollment period, you don't go through underwriting. And you can get in even if you're not that healthy. If you miss the enrollment period when you first sign up for Medicare, now you have to go through underwriting and your Medigap policy is going to be a lot more expensive.
Right.
Okay, I just wanted to get that out of the way.
So just a little tangent from our topic of the EDU show today, but we'll clean up that loose end from that one particular question.
Yeah, I didn't want to blow off his email and then not answer that second part.
Perfect.
All righty. Well, that's it for the EDU show. So what we tried to do today is take three very similar questions and realize, wait a minute, there's a lot of confusion on how wages interact with Social Security. So sometimes wages can cause your actual benefits to decline, some directly through the earnings test or indirectly through taxation. Sometimes some earnings aren't going to impact it at all, and sometimes other earnings, like from a Roth IRA, aren't going to cause the earnings test to come into play or taxation. So we just wanted to straighten up that mess with how wages impact Social Security.
Perfect. So if you have further questions, if you'd like to pose us a question that we can get dig deep into for a future EDU show, or even send us questions for our Q&A show, best way to do that is contact us through our website, jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. On that website, you can also interact with us if you're looking to engage with living, breathing, actual financial planners, which is our specialty here at Jim Solnier and Associates. There's a
When we're not form. Breathing, don't call us anymore.
That's a good test. We'll call it the breathing test, right?
So as long as we're fogging a mirror, we can help you.
Right. So if you want a little, just a kind of an introductory meeting where we can have it over the phone, discuss with you if there's any way we can help you with your retirement situation, it's called a coffee and a second opinion. You can set up that appointment or call us to investigate more about that using the contact form right on the website, jimhelps.com. And we'd be happy to chat with you. And we can reach out to you anywhere in the country. We are physically located in Colorado, but we work with clients all across the nation. And sometimes outside of the nation, actually. We've got expats sometimes that have some retirement planning needs, and we've dealt with them even as well.
Absolutely.
The beautiful part about phones and internet is it practically reaches everyone.
It does.
So thanks for joining us this week on the Retirement and IRA Show.
Yes, I know.
The Retirement and IRA Show, EDU edition. We'll be back with you next week with a brand new show.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Securities offered through Cambridge Investment Research Incorporated, a broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC. Advisory services offered through Cambridge Investment Research Advisors Incorporated, a registered investment advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Jim Solnier & Associates, LLC, and Cambridge are not affiliated.